Okay. What I want to try and do tonight is cover a few things. Hopefully we're able to get everything in tonight. If not, we'll have to reschedule it to finish it off. There's really two concurrent issues which we have to think about. One is a concept with the Chazal made a prohibition called Bishul Akum. The Chazal did not allow us to partake of Bishul Akum, and I want to go through some of those halachas which those apply. There are some scenarios where that apply, where a person would have somebody in the house. They apply in other areas also. There's other applications of that, relevant applications of that. And then there are the concerns which we have in a case where a person has a cleaning lady coming in, a babysitter, housekeeper. There are scenarios where there are real issues which can come up, and go through some of those. So that's beyond the issues of Bishul Akum. You have a problem that maybe they're going to wash the dishes incorrectly. They're going to cook something for themselves, and you know they're going to warm up some of their food. There's Chazal Aser, if meat has been left alone with the non-Jew, there are prohibitions on the meat. There are prohibitions on wine. There's prohibitions on kalim. There's a lot of issues which can come up when a person has somebody coming in. You know, you're going away to work, and you tell your cleaning lady to come in. I'll be back. Later on today. She's there for a few hours by herself, so you can potentially have some real issues. Or you have a babysitter, non-Jewish babysitter with young children who would not be aware. So there are many different possible problems which are there besides the Bishul Akum, besides the issue of Bishul Akum, Bishul Yisrael. So let's do one at a time. So I want to start with the Bishul Akum element, and then we'll try and talk about some of the other potential problems. The Gemara says that Mirabonan Chazal came along and made a gzera that even if food is totally kosher, you cannot eat it if it's cooked by a non-Jew. The concern was that eating together creates a friendship, and that would lead to intermarriage. And Chazal asked eating Bishul Akum. Again, even if you know that for sure that's kosher. Rashi does bring an opinion in the Gemara that the reason why it's also is because you're afraid you might, by mistake, eat so much that's not kosher. It's also another reason besides. Because it is a concern to come to intermarriage, therefore Chazal made some limits that it's not going to be prohibited. There was, they said, if it's something which is, the cooking is not really so significant, it's something which can be eaten raw. It's nechal kamashukha, if it's something which can be eaten raw, Chazal did not prohibit the isra of Bishul Akum. So I have a food which they make a baked apple, and there's clearly nothing else, and it was made in a brand new pan, etc. I know it's kosher, no question. I can eat an apple raw, it's not a problem. More practical applications we'll get to in a second. The second condition which they made, which is very significant, the applications of it are myriad, is Chazal said that it has to be something which is Erlal Shulchan Malachim. That the food has to be a food which, a type of dish that we would serve to a king. The idea being that if we're sharing a fancy dish, that creates a connection between the two people, as opposed to just having potato chips together. That's not going to create that same level of connection that the Chazal were worried about. Person invites you in and has this fancy meal over here, so that's a problem. Now, the definition of Shulchan Malachim, at first glance, seems to be illogical, because, well, most people are not kings, so my neighbor next door, which I should stay away from, well, they're not a king, so that's okay. Right? The real concern is the neighbor next door. So what making a criteria of Shulchan Malachim, the royal table is, it seems, so the Rambam says, it means something which you would invite people over for. Shulchan Malachim was a way to say something which you would invite people over for. They didn't have fancy chefs. You make a nice meal. So there are different definitions, different places can give different definitions. But the one that, based on the Rambam, the one which seems many places can go with, is something that you would serve by a chasna, you would serve by a sheva brachas, you would serve by a nice Shabbos meal. That meets the criteria of Erlal Shulchan Malachim. But if it doesn't meet that criteria, so it's not going to be a problem with Bishul Akum. There are some, I think the Starkei goes with the definition, it would be something which would be served by a state dinner, which is a little bit, that's a step up. And the difference is, I'll tell you the difference is canned food. So canned goods, you're not going to. The White House chef will tell you that he would die before he would serve by state dinner or something made out of a can. Well, but a chasna, anybody's in the catering business will tell you that cans are used, you know. And I think some people like Chef Rachel, they also use cans. So when you take can out of a corn, no, let's try that again. Corn out of a can, right, and use it to make a salad for a Chef Rachel, you would, right? But not by state dinner. They cook fresh corn and they, you know, take it off of the, right. So this definition would have it be significant. So if I want to use canned corn, do I have a problem with Shalakum? Rebelsky Shlita says that corn is edible raw. So it gets away with the first one because it can be eaten raw. Even though most people don't eat it raw, but since it could be eaten raw, it meets the first criteria of Kama Shukai. That's why OU will give a heksher on canned corn because it could be eaten raw. Now, other persons disagree and say, well, but since most people don't eat it raw, so it's not considered Nechel Kama Shukai, therefore it would be a problem. So you have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi what you should do on your canned corn. There possibly are some other kulas on canned corn also, but nowadays, actually, I was reading, within the last year or so, I was reading an article from someone in the Kashrus, and he was saying that nowadays it's actually becoming much more common, it's a fancy thing nowadays to eat raw corn. So it's becoming more normal in this country to eat raw corn, so that possibly nowadays would solve that, take away that problem. Okay. There are some other things which we have to take into consideration with regards to Bishul Akum. If the Jew is involved in the process of cooking it, so it's not usur. If the Jew is involved in the process of cooking it, it's not, Bishul Akum doesn't apply. The definition of being involved is a big machlokes between the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim. The Ashkenazim are very makel. Any involvement at all, any minimal involvement is enough. And that's a lot of the factories rely on. There's some minimal involvement. The mashgiach lights. Historically, what does a mashgiach would light the fire? You know, so that's very nice when you have like a restaurant. You come in the morning. Mashgiach comes at 5:30 in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning when they start cooking for the day. Turns on all the fires. I remember in Del Zeshiva, the first thing that happened in the morning, go into the kitchen. Mashgiach would turn on every single flame. And the Goyim knew they do not touch flames. They don't touch flames. And that Sarkei has the policy also, Goyim do not touch flames. It's not the gay. All flames are lit by the Mashgiach. So that's it. Any flame which is being used, any thing which is being turned on is done by the Mashgiach. So that's it. That's all you need for Ashkenazim. Sephardim are not necessarily happy with that. That's not sufficient for... Sephardim have a much big more chumrah on Bishul Akum. We're not going to get involved in that. Ashkenazim. Right. Ask your rabbi. This only applies to cooking it. If it's already cooked, it's not an issue. So heating is not going to be a problem of Bishul Akum at all. So theoretically, if my goy wants to light the sterno for the chafing dish, that's fine. But the policy, you know, which is Starkey and I think the Vod also, they both have the policy that Goyim don't touch fires. That's what they tell them. That is done by the Mashgiach. This way, this fire, yes, this fire, no, it's not a good idea. All fires are done by the Jews. So, but theoretically, that would be fine. In case where he did that, you can't, you know, halakhically, it would be mutter. I was talking to somebody involved in kashrus. He told me, he says, he would probably throw the food out. Because once they see one time they got away with it, they're not going to make a difference. They said that they threw it out, it's done with, they're never going to do it again. So he, even though halakhically it's mutter food, he's going to say, I'm sorry, you can't do this. Because you got the message... We too confusing for the people involved. What is called cooking for this purpose? So boiling in water is clearly called cooking. Baking is not what we're talking about. Baking bread, cookies, crackers, etc. is the din of Pas Yisrael and Pas Akum, which is a separate category. It applies to roasting. It applies to frying. It applies to cooking. Steaming, most persons say, is not Bishul Akum, would not be an issue with Bishul Akum. So one of the questions that comes up with cans is they're cooked through steam. Some of the cans are cooked through steam. So that depends what it is. Some canned goods are actually cooked through steam, which means most companies now, when they process cans, certain things you cook before you put it in. You can't make cranberry sauce inside a can. You know, put the cranberry inside, you know, close it up, it doesn't work like that. You make a big vat of cranberry sauce, you cook the cranberry sauce, and then you put it into the cans. All right? Certain things you could put into the cans, You put in this big, gigantic retort over there, and they have steam, which gets much hotter than water, and they cook it with steam. So that's going to be mutter. Certain items, what they do is they put liquid inside the cans, and they use the steam to heat up the can, the water inside of the can, and the can, the water can then cooks it. So really it's cooking. It's not steaming. So depending on what it is, so you're going to have a question whether there might be some canned goods are not a problem of bishulakim at all, because they were not cooked with bishul, they were cooked with steam. Some of them, the steam was used as a vehicle to heat the water in the can, and then it was cooked with hot water, which is regular bishul. So it depends what it is. That you get, I'm not going to go through a full list over here, but so just be aware that some canned goods are, yes, a problem, some are not a problem, and you have to ask, you have to be aware of that. Chazal said it's only a problem if it's a type of food which a person eats as part of a meal. So it's a food which is, with the language of Chazal, is lalafis as a pas. It comes to accompany the bread. So that means the meat, fish, those type of things. And something which is eaten as an appetizer, that's part of a meal. Something which is eaten, maybe even dessert is an argument. Whether that would be the halacha of something which is clearly it's made to be a snack type of item. Even you tell me nowadays that our the royal family in England will eat potato chips, you know, whatever they call them, how they call them, crisps, I think they call them. Those chips are actually fries. The chips in England means fries, but they're called crisps, I think. But that's, it's a snack. So I can't say, well, now that the royal family eats it, so it's a snack, you know, now it's a nechal shulchan malachim, separate from bishulakim on potato chips, because they're fried. Right? I mean, that theoretically would be the argument. No, they're made as a snack, and that's not going to be an issue. Popcorn is not an issue, you know, that they pop, that would be an issue. So those are the criteria which you look at when you're discussing an issue, if something is an issue of bishulakim or not bishulakim. Now, what is significant in the issue of bishulakum is that bishulakum, besides making the food prohibited, it affects the kalim. So, it's totally kosher ingredients. Everything is kosher. If we had a situation, remember, we had a situation in yeshiva, one ben azmanim, so the mashkeit, there was no boys were there, there was no breakfast being served. So, the mashkeit didn't turn on the fires. The workers came, turned on the fire, made themselves scrambled eggs. There's no non-kosher ingredients in the kitchen, but you had to kosher the pan because bishulakum it makes the keli also. So that situation, so the issue which comes up in the situation where you have a housekeeper and she decides to make herself a scrambled egg, you say, okay, no problem, you can make those scrambled eggs. If she's making a scrambled egg for herself, you have to kosher that keli now afterwards. So. That's one of the scenarios which people have to be aware of. There is one kula in regards to kalim that if we have a kli which you cannot kasher, it's not kasherable. So, since it's a provision mid rabbanon, we're going to allow it after waiting 24 hours before usage. So, any kli which you can kasher, you must kasher. So if you have a frying pan, you can kosher the frying pan. You can kosher the frying pan. If you have an electric type of an item, which you can't, there's no way to immerse it in boiling water and kosher it. So you can't, there's no way to kosher it. So you would wait 24 hours and then you could use it. Kli cheres, china, earthenware, those type of things. Normally we don't kosher with hagola. Over here, we will be mekel. After 20 hours, you can kosher it with hagola. So those are two kulas which come up by regards to bishulakim of kashering. You could kasher, but certain things but there is a law that you have to kasher. Okay. Here for a moment, I'm going to be a little bit disorganized. Okay, now there is one kula which is very relevant. There is an opinion which is mentioned in the Tosfos that in a case, the concern over here is that this will create this connection, etc. But I have a worker working for me that creates already a social difference between the two of us, and therefore the concern that I might come create this connection by having them cook for me is less. So there's an opinion which says that in any situation like that, it's not going to be a problem of Bishul Akum. We passed in the following. We passed in that you may not rely on that L'chadchilo. So you can't have a situation where you would have the non-Jewish worker be making hot lunch, cooking macaroni for your kids for lunch. Right? You can't have that. But B'di'evid, if they did do it, you don't have to throw out the food, you can use the food. So that's a kula, which is important, at least in the B'di'evid situation, that would rely on this argument that type of relationship is not going to be a problem. Similarly, in that situation, once you're relying on that, you would not have to kasha the kelim. See, if she's cooking food for herself, she's not acting in a capacity as doing it for you, you would have to kasha the kelim. She's cooking it for you, you don't have to kasha the kelim. So that's an interesting twist on this halacha, but that's something a person has to be aware of. She comes, by the way, you're out, I made myself some breakfast, some scrambled eggs. You'd have to kasha the kelim. Oh, I made your daughter some scrambled eggs. Okay, no problem. That would be the difference between those two situations. Mm-hmm. But again, I want to stress, you cannot do that l'chadchila. You cannot have her cooking for you l'chadchila. Just saying, in the case where it was done, but yeah, but you do not need to to lose that. Okay. Now, two more points over here. A few more points over here. If I have an item which, as is, would not be Arlo Shulchan Malachim, but if I could add a spice to it, it would be Arlo Shulchan Malachim, that's considered roy to be Arlo Shulchan Malachim. It's roy to go on, to be used as a fancy dish. But, at the same time, I don't say if I have one type of a if I can make potatoes in such a way that they're fancy potatoes, and I would serve them at a Sheva Brachas, therefore, when I make potatoes, French fries, that they're a problem. I look at each type of dish that I'm making with this food item separately. So I look at each one as evaluated separately. One of the questions which comes up nowadays is, I was having this discussion before. It's interesting. I spoke to a chef. I asked him, tuna fish. Now, sushi is tuna. It's raw. So one of the heterim for is if something is eaten raw, there's no problem with Bishul Akum. So one of the ways to solve the tuna fish question, of Bishul Yisrael question, that is, one of the ways to solve that problem is if you tell me nowadays it's eaten raw, so everything's good. Right? So he points out to me very clearly that this chef, this person that makes sushi, says, no. The species which they use for for your cans, the species you get for the sushi are two different species. It's two totally. You would never yellowfin, skipjack, albacore, bluefin are what you get in your cans, and they will not use that for sushi. And what they use for sushi, they will not use in your cans. So it's two different. So I don't know how you judge that. Because I did see an article from Rabbi Ganak, the head of the Kashrus in OU, which he wanted to suggest that nowadays tuna is better because of the sushi issue. And this, I asked the chef, and he was like, no. I think I insulted him. How dare you dream of putting, bluefin in your sushi, type of a thing. It applies to beverages also. So this is a famous question which just came up. It applies to beverages. What's with coffee? So I want to stop at my rest up along the highway, and I want to pick up a cup of coffee. So it's all ingredients are kosher. There's no problem over there. At Starbucks, the psak right now is a Starbucks which is serving food. You cannot eat there because they wash everything together. So you have to be concerned that the carafes that you carafes that you however you pronounce that thing the pot okay. The glass pot they used, is washed together with non kosher items. That's a problem. But a place where they're only serving coffee, there's no question of non kosher ingredients. So you're not dealing with kashrus. But is there a problem of bishul?
Isn't there always a problem of non kosher ingredients at a Starbucks because they have different flavors? I don't go to Starbucks, but from what I understand,
you're asking about Moritz Gomer. I've never bought a Starbucks in my life.
Yeah.
But what they tell me at least is that in the cooking process. There's the thing you're cooking it, and you're never putting the flavors in.
I don't know. Okay.
The flavors are added afterwards. Okay. So if that's true, again, if they tell me that's true, I'll say you're fine. If that's true, it's true. I have no idea. But if that's true, but you still have a question, Bishalaku. So the person would basically say, even though it does apply to beverages, there is an argument to say that water is there's no din of Bishalaku, because water can be eaten commercial chai. So the cooking is the main cooking is the water, and the coffee is considered, even though it's the main flavor ingredient, is considered secondary to the water. So that's the argument they want to use to be moderate. There is one opinion which says when a person is traveling, because I'll relieve certain prohibitions of bishalakum, so that would be a person is traveling, it is more lenient to rely on that point. The person's in the city, it's more of an issue. To do that, you have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi. Okay, I'm not going to get involved in making a statement that I hold it's a problem. Fine. So that is some of the potential bishul akum issues that a person has in general. Canned goods, it comes up. There is a Mishnah Berurah which says, if I have an item which I can't eat it raw, unless I mix it in with something else, like sugar, something like that, that's called nechel, that can be eaten raw. So he says, ginger, if they would make some type of dish out of ginger, he says, since ginger can be eaten with sugar, you mix with sugar and eat it, so therefore it's considered eaten raw. So I just saw, just today, this is a question that's bothered me for years, was the cranberry sauce issue. Cranberries are extremely bitter, sour, and you can't eat them raw. Right? And cranberries, cranberry sauce is something which would be, you could use it for a nice dinner. So canned cranberry sauce should be found in Bishalakum. So Geffen, Lieber's, etc., all busy Israel, but the there's store brands, etc., they have an OU on them, they're not Bishal Yisrael. They're not Machban Bishal Yisrael on that. So I found an article from the OU that Rabbi Gerstein quoted from Rebelsky. He says, since now that they have craisins, and craisins are not cooked, but it's cranberries with sugar, and they're now edible raw, so that's that Mishnah Berurah. That's called an edible raw, and therefore it's not a problem with Bishul Akum. That's why canned cranberry sauce would be allowed. They held it that's considered allowed, which makes sense. First time I saw a good argument why that should be permitted. So that's an example where that theoretically would have been an issue, and that's why that's going to be mutter. So the applications of the Maisa, there's a lot of it. There's goes different ways, etc. I want to focus more on the scenario where you'd have this issue. You have somebody coming into the house, a person's a babysitter, that you can't have them cooking because of this problem. Now, theoretically, you could have a situation where if you'd want them to cook, and I'm going to tell you shouldn't do it anyway because of all the other problems we're going to talk about. But to address the Bishul Akum problem, so there is the since we hold if the Yisrael lights the fire, that's good enough. So if I could set a timer for my oven, and say you want to bake something, heating food, warming food is not a problem. It's cooking food. If you'd have someone you'd be putting into the oven, and I set the timer. So I set the timer. So it's going to go. The oven will go on at 12 o'clock, and now the babysitter will put the housekeeper will put the food in the oven, and it'll cook. So theoretically, that should be mutter. Not the Riyasha held that was a problem. By many persons hold that's considered mutter. But I have to tell you, just be aware that the opposite, you put the food in the oven and she turns on the fire, is not going to help you. Right? I'll put the raw thing in, it's frozen, I froze it raw, I'll put it into the oven, and at 12 o'clock she should turn on the oven. You don't want to do that. Right? That would be a problem. But there are other issues with having them getting involved in cooking, so it's not necessarily a good idea to be involved in that. Okay. So those are some of your Bishul Akum questions. Okay. What does Akum mean exactly? Any non-Jew. Any non-Jew. The language of Akum means a person who is an idolater, but it's the issue over here, because the concern over here was either because they might switch food or because you might come into Mary, so it's not relevant whether they actually do it, whether they're Muslim or not, or they're atheist or not, doesn't make a difference. Wine is a different issue. There is one question which comes up over here. We find in certain halachas that a Jew who knowingly and willingly decides not to keep Shabbos, etc., gets a din like a non-Jew for many halachas. Does he get a din of a non-Jew for Bishalakum? So one of the arguments is, if the concern is intermarriage, you let him marry his daughter still. So that would be an argument to say that he doesn't get that halacha, a concern of again, it's from a Jew who knowingly and willingly says, I know about Shabbos, I don't believe in Shabbos, he grew up in yeshiva, and he said, I don't believe in this stuff anymore, and he came to Mechal of Shabbos. So his cooking would have a dinner bishalakum, like many poskim. His cooking would have a dinner bishalakum, and that would be a problem.
But there are hatirim. Like, if your family members are no longer from, and they come to your house, you're saying that you can't necessarily eat their food? They're doing everything in front of you, so you're making sure it's kosher? I'm saying, like, I've always...
Again,
it's
Jewish.
Well, he said they grew up really religious, and then they left it.
Right, there's a case most people which went off the derech, I think nowadays, I am not sure that they have the full status. A Mechal Shabbos for Hesia means a person who there's nobody he's embarrassed from.
There's
nobody he's embarrassed from. Right? So, you know, I guess Moshe Feinstein's walking down the street and he says, oh, I'll be Mechal Shabbos for Moshe Feinstein. Yeah, really? Probably not. Most people will not do that. So as long as there's one person out there which they'd be embarrassed from doing in front of, they don't have a din of Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. So it's there's one Rebbe that they remember that they liked, and he would seem they'd be embarrassed to have them see him. You know, I hate Omer Bayim. They're all not nice to me. Really? Him? I wouldn't do it in front of him. Okay, that's all you need. You need one person. So it's, you know, they're doing it because of anger, etc. So usually that situation, you know, it's not anger at God, it's anger at life. You know, so usually there's somebody which you can pull them out, which... But theoretically, yes, the fact that you're watching it doesn't help. The same way if you have a goy they're doing, it doesn't help, the fact that you're watching.
You said that there was a hetzer.
There are some places which are moderate. So again, it's a practical situation. A person has an issue, there's family of shalom bayis, you know, you'd have to ask a local amizah shayla. I'm not telling you there aren't a theorem, but it's definitely not good I did get involved in the chachila. Okay. So that's one issue you would have theoretically when you'd have somebody in the house. Maybe that's the least of your worries. You know, you should not have them being in a cooking situation because of this concern of bishalakum. Even if they're doing it for themselves, but it's going to affect your kelim. But there are other concerns, which are maybe more common concerns. You know, a person has to go out to work, and they have the cleaning person coming in, and you know, so there's food in there's food in the fridge, there's food in the freezer, there's wine bottles, there's pots and pans. You know, what are the halachas? What do I have to do in those situations? Maybe she decided to do you a favor and she washed your dishes for you. Right? That's not necessarily a favor that she doesn't wash your dishes for you, because she might have washed your fleishig dishes with your milk of a sponge. You know, all those possibilities. And I've gotten enough questions over the years that I've been here. Well, you know, the cleaning lady came in and she used the milk of a sponge for the fleishig dishes. I mean, it happens. There is a concept in halacha that Chazal came along and they said the Chazal were concerned about a non-Jew leaving an item in the hands of a non-Jew that maybe they would switch it. They would switch it. Now, it doesn't have to. So the person says, "Well, you know, this person I know, the nicest person in the world, and they would never do that to me, etc." All that being said, that's true. But I think when the kosher ingredient is not available, right? So they're making the dish for you, and there's no margarine. But they told me I shouldn't use butter, but I got to make the dish. You know, I don't know that they're gonna lose sleep that night when they decided to use butter instead. Right? A Frum Yid wouldn't do it, and they'd be sitting be concerned about how it's gonna play out. I can't do this to somebody because I'm worried. Okay, you know, listen, you know, A, B, who said they're knowledgeable? You know, you're assuming that they understand the difference between milk and fleishigs, you know, and there's scenarios which I've been presented with already, you know, where, the, you know, they didn't realize that was what you meant. You can't have milk and dairy together. Well, their definition of milk and dairy together and my definition of milk and dairy together are two different definitions. So are they knowledgeable enough to know what that means? Ask any person who's coming from and how much you have to learn to get used to and how many times they made a mistake. So that's someone who wants to do it right and learning to do it right. So what about somebody who, you know, it's not really that important. They're nice people, and but it's not that important to them. They're not going to sit there and, you know, bend over backwards to make sure that they do it right. But there is another level of concern which Chazal were concerned about, that, you know, would they consider switching something? You know, okay, I'll take that food and I'll eat it, and I'll put something else instead. Let something else instead is theoretically not it doesn't have to be kosher. Now, this is relevant leaving somebody in your house. This is relevant actually sending food through a non-Jew. This is relevant in the case of, you know, anytime you send any hashgacha, any type of caterer, anything, they're sending, the drivers aren't Jewish. Everything is sealed. There's a reason why everything is sealed. Because halachically, you can't do it otherwise. You want to send, you know, I can't picture, I guess, you know, you're looking at a sefer which maybe lives in a different society than we live in. You know, the question over there which somebody asked the Rav was, can you have your non-Jewish help in the house deliver shalchmanos for you? So the answer might be no. Depending on, you know, what the item is, you'd have a problem. You can't, you know, I mean, I can't picture somebody sending my non-Jewish help that I have in my house to send deliver shalchmanos for me, and I don't have that. But I don't think it's so common here in the Silver Spring area that we're grappling with over there. At least in the place where they were talking about, this issue would apply. It doesn't apply in a case where the person's not going to gain any benefit. There's no motivation to switch. But in a case where there would theoretically be motivation to switch, the kosher food tastes better. Yes?
I'm sorry. So, from what I could see, if you had a nanny or housekeeper and they really wanted something, but the hassle of going out to get something and replacing it with something and then covering up for their whatever is more of a hassle than whatever I have in my fridge. Does that count in this? Is it better? Well,
it theoretically counts, but the practice, you don't know what she has in her car. You know what she brought? She brought McDonald's. She says, "Oh, that hamburger looks better than hers," and she'll stick the McDonald's hamburger in. So you can't rely on it.
But you would be able to tell that it's McDonald's hamburger. It looked totally different than what I made last night for supper.
If that's true, yes. If not, I don't know. I don't. You know, beef is. I mean, I can't tell you what McDonald's hamburger looks like compared to this one over here. I can't tell you yes or no. But I don't think you can say that yes or no either. I don't. Now there is a law. If a person comes back, a woman says, "I recognize my food. I recognize my food. I have a tefillah sign on my food." So that law is that would be mutter. Or it's I found it exactly in the place that I left it. So I know that as far I know there was no switching because I know it found exactly in the place that I left it. But I have to be able to mark in my head exactly where I left it. This is very relevant if you go to work and you put a lunch in the fridge, and you know in this. Person working in some secular, you know, everybody shares the fridge. So I put my sandwich in my brown paper bag in the fridge, and I come back and it's not in the same spot. So if I find it exactly the spot that I left it, I'm allowed to assume that nothing happened to it. I should not do that chachila. I should have it in a situation where it's sealed. So if it's bread preferred in halacha needs a seal. Meat, if it's a meat or fish or cheese needs a seal in halacha.
Like what kind of a seal? So tape around the container?
So the best thing to do, the definition of a seal is something that when it's open, they can't put it back together easily. What the Mashkichim usually use is they put a tape which would tear and they write two Hebrew letters on it. So even if you could tape it back together again, getting those letters to work well together, unless you're familiar with Hebrew, is it's hard enough doing it in English. But to do it in Hebrew is very hard because they don't recognize what the letters look like. So we assume that you put a piece of tape and so that's the chachila. That's what a person should do. If they're going to be put in that situation. If Bikur Cholim, they have a room in the house. They don't have a room in the house. They go to visit a patient. You give them something to eat. You put the rest of it in the fridge, you know, by the nurse's station. And the nurse will bring you more later on. Well, how do you do that? You can't do that. You have to have a Jew doing that. You know, that's the bonus. And even if you come back, you know, who said what you have over here? Well, it has your label on it. Says, you know, says Stefanski on it. You know, Stefanski Aaron on it. You know, but who said they didn't pull it off here and put it over here? I mean, they do all that. So how do you know that happened? Well, if you put it around the side in such a way that it's going to tear, and you put an olive base on it or something like that, so then you're okay. But otherwise, it would be so. the scenarios of this issue of chosamas are significant. I've had this question more than once. A person went to work and they called me up from work. You know, my sandwich has been is removed. I think it's my sandwich in the back of the fridge over there. Can I eat it? Oh, they shouldn't be in that situation asking that question. This, you know, they should have arranged in such a way that they shouldn't be asking the question with some type of a chosam. In a case where if a person comes along and says, "I have a tefiyah sign, I can recognize my food."
Right. I don't know. My husband could recognize my sandwiches, but I certainly can.
Right. Okay. But so your husband would have a problem. He has to make some type of arrangement when he puts his food in the. So you keep it. You know, something which is non-perishable, you keep it in your desk. Something which is perishable, you want to put in the fridge. You know, it becomes more of a challenge. So the answer for that is chosamas. Yes.
Sorry. You can use insulated bags, and you can even send little freezer,
those
little things that keep it cold.
Oh, okay, right, nice. Right. I mean, you can do that. Again, if you don't use the fridge, you're good.
Yeah.
But a scenario person wants to do that. He has to be aware of what are the requirements for doing that. Yes.
Does this apply also, like if we work at the Torah school or the yeshiva, and there's a refrigerator for everybody?
The non-Jewish uses it, right? Yeah, they have the right to go in there and take. So you'd have the same issue.
Wrap it up first. Tape or something.
No,
I
wrap it with tape, like for a couple of. Okay. So person is in the house. And the non-Jewish, there's a babysitter there, or there's a cleaning, somebody's coming in to clean, etc. So I have meat in my fridge, so anything which is sealed is fine. So I still have all the meat which is in a package. It's been sealed beforehand. That's not a problem, because it's sealed.
Cheese
would also be a problem.
Okay.
Cheese also requires a seal. So as long as it's still sealed, I'm fine. So I have meat that I bought, and I have it. But I got this large order of meat, and I repackaged it myself in Ziploc bags. So now I have an issue. So lock the freezer. So if the freezer is locked, if whatever's in my freezer, if I can lock my freezer, so that's good. Fridge is usually much more uncommon to have I haven't seen, except for in yeshivas maybe, locks on fridges, that you're able to lock the fridge. I imagine probably in catering places also they have ways to lock fridges, but the average person's house, you can't lock your fridge. So if there's somebody home, you're okay. If somebody is not home, but somebody home means that the person is made to understand you should not be touching any food in the fridge. Now, if you tell them you want them to clean the fridge, you can't say that.
So let's say you want someone to clean the fridge. You have to be home. Like, what happens if I just make sure that everything's sealed? Like, I just put
tape. So you can make sure everything's sealed. So you have an option to make sure everything is sealed.
But just seal, like, and if they're in the house, but they're not cleaning the fridge, I still have to make sure everything's sealed, is what you're telling me.
Let me finish my thought. If I'm not home, but if there's somebody coming in and out, there's a concept called Yotzei V'Nichnes. There's somebody would be coming in and out, which I can ask a neighbor to come in, who's home during the day, and say, can you give him a key? Can you drop in unannounced? And you tell the person who's there, there'll be somebody coming in. So they're expecting somebody. And they're told they shouldn't be in this fridge. So the person wants to, what are you doing in the fridge? They're not going
to
do that.
So we have to tell the housekeeper that you're not allowed to go into any food.
Right.
And you have to tell them that.
Correct.
So what are they supposed to eat? If they're working for you for 7 to 8 hours, you're telling me that they're not supposed to eat at all. They can't bring food in.
No, you should put out a meal for them. The best thing to do is to give something which you should put out.
But you have to put it in your fridge. Chances are it's not something that could sit out on the counter all day.
Ice packs. it's a good question. I'm not sure how you would do it. You should be giving them a meal. It's the best way of doing it. They should not be bringing in food unless you're there or somebody's coming in. You know, and it should be something that, you know, they should. Again, if you seal everything in your fridge, you're fine. But if you don't want to do that, So they shouldn't have excuse to go into the fridge, because otherwise they're going to the fridge. I don't know what they're doing in the fridge. But take it back. But even that only helps if there's somebody coming in. If nobody's coming in, what does it help me? Where do you put it? They still can go to the fridge. I'm not there yet. Right? We're not there yet. Yes?
When you say seal everything in the fridge, let's say I have a cut salad, Israeli salad in the
fridge. No, so salad, it applies to bread, meat, fish, and cheese.
That's it.
Right.
Not orange juice, not...
Right.
Okay.
So if you have somebody coming in, now, how often do they have to come in? So, or the more common case is, I'm home, and I have to step out to do an errand. So as long as they don't know how long I'm going to be away for, they'll still be back in any minute. Unless I've been doing this for weeks and weeks, and I always go out for a long period of time. So then they... But if they don't, I don't tell them how long we're going to wait for. I had a sitter, somebody called me up 2 weeks ago. They had somebody there in the house, and she stepped out to do an errand. I said, "What did you tell her?" She says, "I'll be back in an hour." Oh, okay. You shouldn't have said that. She says, I'll be back soon. That's a totally different sentence. I'll be back in an hour. Don't bring me back in an hour. I mean, I have an hour all by myself. So Yotzei Minichnas has to be that the person will walk in originally at the beginning of this arrangement. Person will walk in a few times unannounced. Let's say the person's there for a few hours. Two or three times the person will stop in, random. Once they've established that pattern, this person comes, they don't have to do it every single day. They're every time that they're there. They can do it once in a while, but they understand there's somebody who will be walking in unannounced at any given moment, so they're, and they understand that they shouldn't be doing this, and they understand that if they're doing this, you know, you're going to be upset with them. And that might affect... They're, whether you're keeping them as, you know, employed, they're not going to do it. You're allowed to rely on that. We had a scenario here in Yeshiva, so the night crew is here at nighttime, and they stay till 1 o'clock. There's no one here at 1 o'clock in the morning. So we have a camera in the kitchen, and the workers are told that it's checked, and if you will be seen going into the fridge, you will be fired. And we actually did that. And there was a worker who was taking food. He wasn't. I don't know if he's doing anything wrong, but he was told, "You cannot go into the fridge." He said, "I want to have supper," you know, right? But he was fired. And the next crew which came in was told that the last guy was here was fired for doing this. They're not touching it. We've done random checks on the. They don't go near that fridge. They want their job, right? So the person understands that it's not worth it for them to do that. So you created a negative motivation for them to do that. Okay. The Ramah raises a question in a case where there's nobody home. The case where there's nobody home. So besides the food being an issue, he says, "Are kalim an issue? Maybe the person cooked." They cook something, and they brought lunch from McDonald's and warmed it up in your pot. You don't know that. You have no idea whether that happened or not. So the Ramah says that definitely chachila, you cannot have the situation. So they have to know they can't use any pots. They cannot be warming something up. The best thing is they should not be warming anything up. The Ramah holds it's a problem that he says we're because it's a suffix b'di'evid. If you wait 24 hours, you can use your kalim. Because even if they use something, it's probably going to be mutter after 24. It will not be derisive after 24 hours. It's the rabbanon. So after 24 hours, you can use your pots. The solution is to put your pots in a way that you know where they are. So you come back and your pots are in the same spot. You're allowed to rely on that. You've told them they can't use the pots. You told them that if they use the pots, they will be in trouble. And when you come back, you know where the pots are, so you're fine. They shouldn't be doing anything, and you can check afterwards. That relies on being organized, that you know where your pots are, and your pots are put away in a certain way, and etc. You know where your pots are, and you find them in the same spot. If it'd be a man running this business, you know, this kitchen, I can't guarantee you'd be able to rely on that. There's pots, from McGee's closet, there's pots inside there, you know. So what do you do over there? So But you can rely on the other ones. As long as there's somebody coming in. Because others, what's stopping them? Yeah, they know they're in trouble. But how am I supposed? They're not gonna get caught, right? because nobody's there for 6 hours. But so I can rely on the case. I know where the items are afterwards. I can know where the items are afterwards. And if they aren't in the same place, I have to wait 24. I have to wait 24 hours before I use them, those pots, or some she will give the kasher them. If you go away for a few days and leave your housekeeper in the house, you know, a lot of places will give the kasher to Kalim afterwards. It's not a simple question, but if I can't rely on that, so I have to have somebody coming in. I have to some way that there's or put in a camera. So there, you know, there's a camera in the kitchen. And we're recording it. I mean, nowadays, it's, you know, cost what it costs, a few $200. You know, and you can get a close, you know, close circuit TV with recording. So I mean, nowadays it's like it once upon a time was a real big issue. How do you deal with it? Nowadays, it's a machia. You know, how to deal with it?
But it seems I have 3 hours to go back and watch what my housekeeper is doing in my kitchen.
No, that assumes it means that she has to think that you're going to do that. And you did it, that, you know. Now, theoretically, if one time she did it and she didn't get caught, you're in trouble. But the mirsis of she knows she can't do it, if she does it, she's going to be, at one time she'll get a warning, the second time she's out, right? That's clear to her. And she knows that you can look, chances are she will not do it. We can lie, there's a mirsis she won't do it. But every once in a while, a person should check.
Can I don't know if anybody else feels that way, but I feel very, very uncomfortable going over to our cleaning lady that I've had for a long time and saying, like, by the way, I'm now going to record you and I just want to make it clear that if you touch any food in my fridge, you will be fired. Does that make anybody else uncomfortable? Because I feel
uncomfortable,
way too uncomfortable.
I can't imagine a woman continuing to work for someone else.
Right.
They just said something like that.
Like, here's someone who's worked for you for how many years and you're going to put a video camera in your kitchen?
You can have somebody drop in. You know, make a big thing out of it. Your neighbor drops in. You have to tell them why they're dropping in. The neighbor's dropping in.
You have to video camera.
You don't have to tell them, you know, by the way, but they should know. You know, that you know, because of the because of kosher standards. You know, it's really prefer you not to. We don't want you in the fridge. Would she like you coming to your house during her holiday? When I don't know what they're doing and playing on your. She wouldn't like it either. Like, she doesn't trust you, but she has a way. Her doing her rituals. I have rituals in my kitchen. You know, something to do with it. You're the nicest person in the world. I love you, but my rituals are my rituals. I mean, it doesn't have to come across a negative way. And my rituals are very important to me, right? But you know, you don't have to tell her why you're having a neighbor drop in. You can do that. I didn't say it's comfortable. I didn't say it's comfortable.
Can't you ever come to a point where you can trust the housekeeper?
Halachically, it's no.
No.
The one issue which is a very this is sadly this is a common issue, and this is where you talk about the real bidyevids. You have an elderly person, elderly woman, elderly man. They're all by themselves, no family around to take care of them. So what does the family do? They hire a worker to take care of them. That worker is there every single day in the kitchen. The man or the woman can't go in the kitchen to check up on them. They can't walk. This person will be cooking. This person will be taking, arranging all of the meal, taking, what are you going to do? Ramesh Zatzal had a tshuva where you had a situation. It was an elderly woman, came from Russia. She was from, she's living by her grandchildren and who, you know, she was from the generation in Russia who was still frum. Her grandchildren were two generations later. They were totally atheistic, and they didn't believe anything. But she no longer could take care of herself, and she moved in by her grandchildren. They were cooking for her. So, you know, they were Jewish. They're not Jewish, whatever the situation, but, you know, were they halachically reliable? They're not reliable. So what do you do? So Mershon found certain heterim in that situation. They gave that type of shas atzchak. Well, we're going to find some heterim. That's called a shas atzchak. You know, because what are you supposed to do? The person's starved to death. You know, so you want to find a Jewish housekeeper. There's no Jewish housekeeper at all. Okay, now they should starve to death. I mean, they got to eat. You know, but having a housekeeper in, I mean, it's, you know, it's important. But you know, it's not the same level of this person. This is his. They got to take care. We need someone to take care of their wife. Yeah.
Can I just ask a politically charged question?
Yes.
Before I run to Holy Cross. In terms of taking, I've never had anybody clean my house, my kitchen, except me, my husband a little bit. But in terms of, I'm very passionate about this in terms of, you know, I take care of my elderly father-in-law. He's in a home. There are no homes that are under a VOD, like group home type thing. So you have a situation where, you know, you go for, you have to have a certain level of care. You can't do it yourself, so you just go for what's as kosher as you can get. But, you know, my husband and I have discussed it. Like, when we're older, we would like full hog, but it doesn't exist. And in New York, there's homes, but they're not group homes. They're, like, very expensive nursing homes. But just like, you know, a home with 8-10 residents, and they might have kosher food and bring an empire and separate meat and milk. But to achieve Bishul Yisrael, I'm just, it's like, I don't understand why it's not a priority. You know, everybody's asking about their cleaning help and this and that. But then you get to a situation where somebody needs either in-home help or they need to live in a group situation. And there's simply nothing that is to the standard of
halacha.
Halacha, licha, hila, you know. Right. And you need the care. There's, yeah, I mean, right. There's, you absolutely need the care. You can't, I mean, I can't change a 150-pound man's diaper five times a day.
Right, I understand. Yeah, it's a good question. I don't have a good answer.
Okay.
I mean, right now, I mean, in Baltimore, I think right now there is a few places.
Baltimore has a place, and
right.
It's underwritten by the Federation, but,
yeah. Right.
You know, but it's one place.
Right.
So
it... Yeah, it's something which, it's a very good point. It's a very good point. It's a valid question.
Now that I've asked that little charge question, I exit to the
That's fine.
Hospital.
Okay.
Thank you.
Don't forget your coat.
What? Oh, that's not my coat. It looks like it belongs to one of the yeshiva boys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So theoretically, if you want to have them, I lost my train of thought. So the scenario where a person is at home, they're going in and out, the person is stepping out for a little bit, as long as you don't tell them how long you're going to be, and you don't create a pattern where you're leaving that on a regular basis, you're fine. And a person was clearly going to be out for a period of time, the best thing to do is if you can find a neighbor, somebody who should be dropping in, you should, and does it once in a while, you say, you know, neighbor will be dropping in, and really we prefer that I'm going to leave you something over here, the fridge, you know, we've just been trying to upgrade our kashrus responsibilities, it's hard for me to explain all the details for you, please don't go in the fridge. I think that's something which is doable.
If you haven't been doing this for this entire time, do I need to re-kashrus my whole kitchen?
If you haven't been doing this entire time, no, because once it's past 24 hours, we deal with it as a suffix or a bonnet and you're making on it. If you don't know they've used anything.
Oh yeah, that's
it. If they use something,
you always put away every single dish. I never have anything out that they could possibly be using.
Right, because you don't want them.
Right, but that's for cleaning purposes. I don't want them cleaning any dishes.
Okay. Wine. Just in 5 minutes or less. So, cleaning ladies come in, you know, and there's a bottle of wine on the table, and they move it to clean. So if it's cooked wine, not a problem. If it's sealed, it's not a problem. Now, it doesn't have to necessarily be factory sealed. You can reseal your bottle of wine also. Back to that. If you seal it with something, again, which that the equivalent of, had it been opened, it would be obvious that it goes back to the status of factory seal. Closed bottle of wine does not get a problem. An open bottle of wine, which is not—if it's non-cooked wine, it's non-mevushal wine, and it's open, the wine becomes prohibited if a non-Jew moves it. Wine vinegar also has this problem. Until it gets to the point where it's so sour, if it's very very sour, that the Shulchan Aruch says, if you put it on the ground, it starts bubbling. I don't think we have the type of, we're not using that level of, what, it's 5% acetic acid? What is it? You know, we don't have that. They're talking about, like, you know, acetic acid. It would apply to wine. So your best solution for these type of things is to seal them. Put it with the tape of two Hebrew letters, and you're good.
Wine vinegar isn't mevushal?
If it is, it is. I don't know. You're asking an amor, it's government. When it comes to that, I have no idea. They're saying throughout, it applies to wine regular. If they cook or not, I don't know.
I have two quick questions. If you're in the house, can you have a housekeeper wash the dishes?
Yes. As long as you're watching, make sure that they know, she knows the procedure, and you're making sure that she, you know, she.
Okay. Now, what if, let's say, you turn your oven on, you put food in the oven, and you have to go run a quick errand, and you put a timer on, and you say, take it out when the buzzer goes off. Can you do that?
If you don't tell them they can take it out. There's not a problem with taking it out. The only problem is that now you're getting them involved in the cooking process, which if they know that that's the only thing you're supposed to be doing and you're going to be back soon, that's fine. If you tell them back in an hour, that's going to be, you shouldn't be doing that. I do want to point out one other thing. In a case where you catch them doing something wrong, right? So you say, okay, I can't use the food, I can't use the pot. You know, just keep the pot, keep the food. Rav says you can't do that. You do not reward them for doing something wrong. So you do not give them the food, you do not give them the pot. Actually, the Shach says you do not give it to any non-Jew. You cash out the pot and the food you throw out. But because you don't want to get the message, well, okay, it's worth it for me because, you know, I got this Jew to give his neighbor, you know, lunch. So you don't want that situation. So he says you do not pass it off to them. You absorb the loss. Okay. This halacha that you have to kasher kalim afterwards, you know, the question of kasher kalim, it only applies to things which you'd use for hot. So something which would be used for cold anyway wouldn't be an issue. You know, it's only something which, theoretically, the question would be cooking, etc. and that. Okay. I think I covered most of the things I want to cover. So, just from all of that, you can see why the poskim. I actually saw an article. I saw an article from Ramotel Katz that's out. So Ramotel apparently was coming more in vogue in America. Just people were having non-Jewish help in the house, etc. And he wasn't happy with it. So they asked him. They did it in Europe. It was very common in Europe to have non-Jewish help. See, he has a whole response. Where he's a person who came from Europe. You know. He says the way they did it in Europe, the way they do it nowadays, are two different worlds. The Jewish person was always there. It was as opposed to leaving the person by themselves. The Jewish person was always there. They were not allowed to cook. They were not allowed to. They would chop wood. They would draw water. But they were not involved in the cooking process at all. He goes to a whole list of so don't tell me we used to do it in Europe. It's not what we're talking about. This is a whole different ball game than what used to happen over there. So I remember. 2 weeks, I was looking for a different article about something else from Rebbe Meir blog, which is the other Tazer Shiva, and I found the journal which he published this thing, and the next page was Remotel's response to that. I said, wow, that was fortuitous that I found that point, because that was a question which bothered me, because I heard that they used to do it in Europe under the Rabbanim did it. The Tazer Rav supposedly had a non-Jewish woman there in the house helping. So the answer is yes, but he says civilly, he's addressing that point that that's not what they revolved was not this at all. Yes, thank you.
Although we don't have them here, they do still exist. What about a stove or an oven that has an automatic pilot? So gas is going all the time.
So that's much better in regards to the Bishalakum issue. That's regards to, because if you they were basically stopped by the government. The government made, you don't see them in
Canada. You can still get them.
What?
Canada.
You can still get them, right? You know, the old ones, you have the old ones. So those would be good. So for Ashkenazim, if the non-Jew would turn on the fire from a pilot, that's considered, if the Jew lights the pilot and the non-Jew lights from that, that's sufficient. In an Hashkacha situation, I've spoken to different conscious organizations, they do not rely on that anymore. They used to rely on it, but the problem is it goes out too often. That the pilot goes out, so she has that. What's going to happen? So if you light the fire, you light the fire. You're relying on the pilot, you're in a problem. So they don't rely on the pilot. But if the pilot's on, you could theoretically, that issue you'd be able to solve with Mishalakim with a pilot. It would be on. For Ashkenazim, not for Sardin. Okay.